Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, presented by Gold Medal Squared. Here is part two of our conversation with UCLA beach coach Stein Metzger. Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen. All right, well, now we got some questions about your playing career, if you can remember that far back. It's a short list of players that have shots named after them. Can you tell us what the Steino Pokey is and how you developed it?
As you guys know, and beach volleyball players know, a pokey is when you bend your knuckles and you poke the ball. It's basically an open hand tip that's legal on the beach. And I actually learned it from Ingenio, Eduardo Basil, who old timers will remember fondly. I played with him. I talked him into playing with me as I was just getting started and trying to come up on the tour. And he probably shouldn't have played with me because he was a well-established and accomplished player. And I was just a young punk looking for a piece of the pie. And he basically would play with me on the weekend. And then whatever I would mess up on the weekend, he would train me during the week. And I learned the pokey from him among some other shots like the foot volley chester and kicking the ball, et cetera. A bunch of colorful different things that he would do. But he taught me the pokey, so I can't really claim it. But I certainly used it quite a bit when, you know, there's blockers like Lambo and Phil came out on tour and I couldn't hit by them. I just figured I'd poke it and save some energy.
Yeah, you made it famous, though. If you didn't invent it, you gave
only,
it some legs.
Only because I would be willing to poke it 8 times in a row if someone wouldn't get it. long as I got the win.
You did use it a lot. So most defenders tend to play the right side, and you were, I think, one of the few that played left. Is it because of that pokey, or is there another reason why you played a lot of left side?
I think it was just a matter of playing the opposite of what my partners played for a while. I did start out playing right, and I was also a blocker starting out. My first few years on tour, like with Ingenio, I blocked. With Wayne Seligson, I blocked. Kevin Wong wanted to switch with me all the time.
Of course he did.
Split block with me.
Yeah. He's too tired.
And then I transitioned to defense once I was able to get like a high-level blocker to actually play with me. And I guess I was just happened to be on that side because, well, I got to play with Wong and he was a right sider. So it made sense to stay on the left. And then I played with Dax and we split. So I was blocking 70% again. And then Jake Gibb played on the right. Well, he played on the left with Adam Jewell before that. So I guess we switched him over to the right.
Moved him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I didn't put that much thought into it. Why do you think players play on the right? Well, defenders play on the right.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the on two with the bigger blocker or kind of opens up the cut shot a little bit with like crossbody arms. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you think, Billy?
Yeah, I would say that just the big guy hitting on two and hitting some a bad pass, still be able to take a rip. And it seems like right sides shoot a little more, which might be more of a
a little more rangy with the.
Stein didn't need someone to go on two for him.
I do know I like to put, for our team now, I like to put our better passers on the right, just because most people are right-handed, so if the ball's coming up over your head, it's tough.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of big physical athletes. What do you think made you stand out and have the success you had?
I think a willingness to outwork people. I was never afraid of, like, really putting in time and work. Again, I'm just so passionate about the game. I just have so much fun competing that going out and practicing and playing never felt like work to me. So I think I just logged a lot of hours. I certainly have the mileage on my body to prove it. I as Al Zena, who was my coach, said, I really like to let no stone go unturned. So I guess that's part of the passionate part. I just can't stop thinking about volleyball and how I'm going to like scrape together another point each game. Mm-hmm. Certainly, as you guys, I think you're alluding to, I wasn't the most physical player.
Billy said that, not me.
There's some taller guys.
I don't have I don't have a, I'm not super tall. I don't have a great jump. I'm not super fast, but I did have long arms. And I certainly just, I just was really passionate about playing and thinking about the game and just really tried to make the most of it.
What were some of the stones that you unturned that you, would open up?
I guess strategic ones.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't call myself a great, I don't think I was a great technical player, but in terms of just strategy, and I think that had a lot to do with just playing a lot as a kid. Like you said, we played a ton of baby court growing up and just trying to like figure out your opponent's tendencies and see what you could do to try to stop people and just have you know great strategies against teams. I think that's probably one avenue.
I talked to Irene in the gym, one of your coaches, and she was saying that you had a lot of mental tricks that you kind of taught the players. And do you have anything that come to mind when it comes to strategy or any of those mental tricks that she could be talking about?
Well, as my wife says, I'm the great minimizer when it comes to volleyball. I'm always just trying to like play down the importance of a match. I know I would never look at prize money when I was on the pro tour. I just really tried to take the pressure off of having to win. And that seemed to make, I always seemed to play better, at least in my own head. That's what I thought when I was playing. But certainly, I think as an athlete, we put in so much time and effort into the training that obviously the results are very important to us. But the more we think about that and the more we think about the results, I don't think it serves us. So constantly just, I have this visual of like making pizza dough and you're just like kneading the pizza dough over and over and over. And as you're going through a tournament or a match, I try to tell our athletes, like, you constantly just knead that dough constantly. So you're always like thinking positive thoughts or filling your mind with technical stuff. So we don't allow some of those negative thoughts or the what ifs or, you know, what's going to happen to us in the future if we win, or what if I win this, or what if I don't lose, and what's that person going to think, and that rabbit hole that we can go down to that can just be catastrophic for us as athletes. We have to continue to just like manage and maintain and massage our minds to keep us in a mind frame where, you know, we're able to drop into the zone more easily and play more freely.
Yeah, it definitely looked like, to me, especially at the end of your career, you looked like a lot looser and maybe quicker to smile. I just remember watching a match with you and Mark Williams, and it seemed like, you know, you'd almost like celebrate some of the plays like laughingly. I guess, did your mindset change or approach to competition change throughout your career, or were you always have that kind of minimizing attitude?
Yeah, I think it did. I actually felt freer as a younger athlete when I was first starting. And I felt like in intense moments, I felt like it was easier for me to be loose and rise to the occasion in big moments. And then later in my career, and I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, tying your ability to survive financially to your career. And yeah, also, you know, I think it's harder once you've gained something or attained something, to stay free because you feel like you have something that you could maybe lose. And I think there's some research behind that in terms of like also gaining a lot of praise as a young kid, just kind of like blank praise. And then it makes it more difficult for you to continue to stretch and challenge yourselves because of a fear of losing that praise from someone. I think it might, I'm trying to reflect on where I read that, but I certainly felt that as an athlete when I played, like, okay, I've gotten to a certain point. You know, I'm used to paying my rent and now I feel like I'm more stressed out when I'm in these big moments. And that might be where I learned some of these tricks in terms of minimizing and trying to take some of the pressure off of these big moments. But maybe when I was just playing with Mark Williams, he's just fun, such a fun guy to play with. I was probably just really enjoying playing with him. And I don't think at that point in my career, I don't think I was, we were practicing at all either. He was down in San Diego. I was in the South Bay. He would drive up like once a week or vice versa. And then we'd just show up on a weekend. So we really, our expectations were not that high. And I think we would exceed our expectations pretty typically, but that was just in my last year or two.
And you're just underhand serving Brad Keenan.
Yeah.
Hey, I took the stats and we scored better when I underhanded serve as opposed to jump serving, and it hurt a heck of a lot less. So I figure why not?
It was a tough serve. Deep middle.
Yeah.
What do you miss most? Serve. Yeah, the coaches serve, exactly. What do you miss most about competing?
I think the camaraderie with your partner. You know, if you can get a great partner and really celebrate each other and have fun out there, that's just, there's nothing better. Jake Gibb was a great guy to celebrate with. Lambo was great. Wonger, Dax, I had so many great personalities and people to play with. And when things are going well and you just look each other in the eye and just give each other that look like, here we go, partner. I really miss that. There's nothing better than that.
And what would you do differently, knowing what you know now about coaching and stuff?
What would I do differently about coaching now?
As a player?
Yeah, like as a player, would you have structured your practices differently, or like kind of knowing what you know now? Is there anything you would have done differently as an athlete?
I think I would probably be more structured and more disciplined about, you know, how we run a practice in terms of timeline, what we want to get accomplished in a single day. I think we've learned to, especially managing a bigger group, that it's important to be organized and get ahead of stuff. And so I think we were just, when we started playing, there weren't even any coaches out there. You're basically just going out there and like, oh, I think I need to get better at this. Why don't we just kind of invent a drill right now on the spot? Which there's something to be said for that. But in general, I think it would have helped to be more organized earlier in my career in terms of like what we were trying to accomplish and get better at, what parts of our game.
All right. So to finish off, we have some listener questions. This one is who was already mentioned, your former partner and UCLA teammate, Kevin Wong.
Yes, Wonger.
He asks a very serious question.
Of course.
As expected. What was the craziest haircut you ever had?
He knows the answer to this. Well, when I was a freshman here at UCLA, obviously, you know, when you're in college, you're not expected to have any money. So I was totally broke. And we were sitting around the table at dinner in the dorms, and I told the guys, I don't know how it came up, I said, I'll let you guys do anything you want to do to my hair for $100. And within like 4 to 5 minutes, there was literally $100 on the table. And I thought, oh no, this is trouble. So they take me upstairs to one of the dorm rooms and bust out one of those buzzers, those razors. Yep. And they give me the same haircut as Al Skates, which is bald on the top with some hair around the sides. But I had long hair at the time, and I literally looked like Bozo the Clown. But part of the deal for $100 is I had to keep it for a week. So I had to walk into practice as a freshman, and there's legendary Al Skates, you know, who's got aura for weeks. He comes into the room. He comes into the gym. Like, we've already been warming up for 30 minutes. He comes into the room. The doors fly open. Smoke comes out behind him. You know, he's like the god of volleyball. And I'm just some little punk first quarter freshman. And I'm sitting here with that haircut. And he goes through his whole deal like, oh, you know, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. And he gives me a double take. And he goes, oh, I thought you were so-and-so who was here from the 1970-something team. And just cracks up. And I was totally panicking for no reason. I figured I was going to be doing sprints or maybe off the team. But that was a pretty interesting experience to go around campus with a bald cap on.
That's a good one.
And we got two from former UCLA teammate Jeff Nygaard. He asks, people say top-level players don't make good coaches. Why do you think this is, and how have you bridged the perceived gap with your back-to-back success?
That's a good question, and one I was thinking about last week, and I don't think I have an answer for Jeff. But certainly, I think a willingness to learn and just get better and learn how to present and transfer the information that maybe you had learned as a player to other athletes, I think, is a critical thing. I honestly don't feel like I've come up with any original information. Even the pokey Jacko taught me, I just decided to use. And I think one of the skills that I've harnessed is being totally willing to borrow or steal ideas from somebody else. And being at a spot like UCLA, I'm just super lucky to be able to have other coaches around to learn from. And just recognizing, like, hey, you know, all the information that I've learned as a player, I can just throw that out the window and continue to learn and figure out what's going to make sense for another athlete that may move a little bit differently or have different skill sets or different positive attributes that I may or may not have had, and look at each person individually, you know, as much as possible, even in when you're having to manage 19 athletes.
Cool. And Jeff wants to know if you think men's beach will ever exist in college.
I hope so. It's certainly going to be an uphill battle and challenging. But maybe it could start it at some schools that don't have football programs. I know that there's been some talk of it, but I don't know if any of it's been serious, to be honest, but I think it would be a great thing.
Yeah, it'd be nice even at a club level, like it is indoors. You know, a lot of the schools have pretty quality club teams that play.
Yeah, I think that's where we'll have to start at least.
Yeah. All right, from one of your seniors from this year's title team, Sarah Sponsel, she has a couple questions. One is, as a coach, what's your ultimate goal for your athletes over the course of their college career?
I think to have a great experience, to learn, and to walk out with some really strong relationships with teams or with fellow teammates, that you can see them at a reunion 10 to 20 years from when you graduate and feel like you didn't skip a beat, and just hug it out and just reminisce on great times that you had together. I know that I have that with my former teammates, and my hope is that, you know, all the athletes that leave whatever program they're at feel like it was totally worthwhile, even though it's extremely hard at times to be a student athlete in college, and that those bonds will be forever.
Love it. Her second question is, what is your most memorable moment as a coach at UCLA?
Well, there are probably a number of them where she's involved. Like any time that I would call any of her hits out and she would scowl at me and I'd have to change my call. There are a bunch of them. I think, certainly I get emotional when I see an athlete, work extremely hard on a certain skill or something that's really difficult for them. And they really work through it and try really hard to get proficient at a certain skill, you know, whether it's a handset for the first time in a big situation or running a certain play, or some kind of defensive strategy that we've been working on that was just really challenging for them, and seeing them being able to execute it in a game and have it work, and just, you know, to see them look over or look at their partner and just like glowing with like, oh my gosh, I totally did it in a real situation. It's extremely rewarding for me, and just something that's like keeps me coming back for more. I just love that.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's never ending.
Yeah.
All right, her last one from Sponsel. Throughout your beach volleyball career, what are some of the biggest life lessons you learned from all the ups and downs in your career that you could pass on to young beach athletes entering the professional game like her?
As my high school coach said, keep an even keel, which is, don't get too high, don't get too low. Understand that whether you're on a streak of losses or a streak of wins, you just got to stay the course. You don't change a thing. Just can stay steady, stay even keeled. I remember in my pro career, like sucking on like three or four 17ths in a row and just trying to figure out what's going on, like what's wrong. It doesn't feel like we're doing anything differently. And then if you just stay the course, next thing you know, you're on fire and getting a bunch of final fours in a row. And then I remembered at that point, after, you know, being on a hot streak, like, hey, right around the corner is just another 17th. So just let's enjoy it while we can and just stay the course.
Yeah, that reminds me, Stein, you had when you and Lambert were playing, I think you got a 25th in Texas. You lost two in a row, and then you lost first round in Huntington the next tournament. And for your level, like three in a row was pretty big. And you guys came back and won the tournament in Huntington. I guess, can you take us through that story and kind of what you guys were thinking?
Wow, that's a good memory by you. I remember the Huntington one, but I didn't remember that we went 1-2 barbecue in Texas. But that I do vaguely remember that now.
You blocked that out.
Yeah, exactly. That was a while ago, so I don't totally remember it. But I do remember the lessons of not getting too bummed out or too high on wins and losses and just recognizing that, you know, it'll all play out in the end if you just stay the course. But certainly that was a rewarding tournament and one a story that we were able to use with the team last year when we won our first championship and we lost second round to Florida State. Actually, that happened on the anniversary of losing in Huntington and coming back and winning the tournament and being able to just share that story like, hey, you know, crazier things have happened than us coming back and being able to win this thing. You know, this happened to us 10 years ago. It's totally doable. And I believe in you guys, et cetera. And we had some leaders step up and it was a great opportunity to kind of retell that story. And we ended up winning last year.
And our last question comes from your former beach coach, Jeff Alzina. What events, experiences specifically gave rise to your decision to get into NCAA coaching?
Really had to do with Coach Seeley, Mike Seeley, who coaches with the women's team. We had stayed connected over the in recent years leading up to him giving me an opportunity. We had moved back to Hawaii after my playing career, Emily and I, and had our first kid there in Hawaii. And I was getting into real estate there and it was, things were starting to pick up. And I just had a moment where I thought, hey, is this the path that I want to go down? Because, you know, as this thing starts rolling and we start having kids, it's going to be hard to change directions and just recognize, like, I wanted to get back into athletics, came back to California, bumped into Coach Seeley. It was really like right place at the right time. And I was looking to some other business opportunities and volunteered with him and just had so much fun, coaching and being around the sport again that I knew that, I wanted to continue doing that. And so, really it was just right place, right time, tried it. It clicked. And that was right around the same time that UCLA was thinking about starting a beach program. I think Seeley was instrumental in getting that going as well. And they asked me, hey, are you interested in taking this on? I said, absolutely. And that was 7 years ago now.
Well, they're lucky to have you. And we were lucky to get to learn from you here. And reflecting, I feel like when I first came out to play on the beach, as soon as I got knocked out of the tournament, I would go to your court and watch and figure out, how does Stein do it? Can I do that? And then now, as I'm done playing and watching you coach and trying to learn, how does Stein do it? How can I be like that? So I think I just continue to want to grow up and be like you. So keep showing me the way.
Well, I appreciate that, Johnny. I feel the same way. Hopefully we get more opportunities to connect and learn from each other.
Love it. Look forward to it.
Thanks, Stein.
Thank you, Billy. All right, take care, guys.
Thank you for listening to Coach Your Brains Out, presented by Gold Medal Squared. And go check out our book, Coach Your Brains Out, Lessons on the Art and Science of Coaching Volleyball, available at Amazon and probably some other places too. To become a patron of the show, visit patreon.com/coachyourbrainsout.